Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, become an expert on Halloween at the resort, eat some great treats this season, take a sip from the Master of Fright,
a new way to get to the resort, interact with BB-8, we talk with Tim about Disney and the military, social engineering, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of September 18th, 2019. I'm Tig Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our patrons, including Tara F., for supporting the show. We are very close to a pretty big milestone, you guys. We are just one away from 100 supporters. So,
how exciting.
Very exciting. So we're very excited to see who our 100th supporter is going to be. But this support does help make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more and to be that 100th supporter, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
I just want to say that I think it is so amazing. I never would have thought would get to 100.
It's mind-boggling.
Well, and that trip did it because we were at like 80 for like ever. Mm-hmm. So thank you, everybody. Well, have you taken advantage of the free year of touring plans yet? Why not? It's as easy as contacting concierge to book your next Disney vacation. James and Mike would love to provide you with this excellent service, along with helping you plan a great Disney vacation at no additional cost to you. You already know you want to go to the parks, probably because hearing about how awesome it was that we went to the parks not too long ago, and Teresa's going this next week. So why not contact concierge and get the planning started? Remember, the dining reservations start at the 90-day mark, and they can help with those as well. So the earlier you get started, the better.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, just a quick update that the tickets for the Oogie Boogie Bash have all sold out. If you want to experience this event, you're going to have to wait till next year.
So this isn't really related, but I'm so excited that I get to go on Sunday. It's going to be amazing.
Is that you're going Sunday?
Yep, we're going Sunday. It's going to be so, so, so much fun. I'm already overwhelmed because there just seems like there's so many awesome things to do. We're actually going to start our bashing, or Oogie Boogie bashing, however you want to say that.
Sure.
Before the party technically starts. We got dining packages to go over to the Wine Trattoria.
The Wine Country Trattoria.
Yes, yeah. I always feel like I butcher the name.
Me too.
We're going to eat there at 3 o'clock.
Nice.
I'm very excited because I haven't eaten there before.
Is that for the parade?
It is for the parade. Mm-hmm. So my aunt and I are going to do that with our friend and listener Alex and his friend Misty.
Nice.
So we're meeting up with them, going to enjoy some delicious food before the... Because when we first were talking about it, I'm like, I don't know if I want to devote like dining package time and eating time during the party because I already feel like there's so many
sure.
cool things to do. I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to do all of them. And he said, oh no, the reservation's actually before the party. I was like, perfect.
That's actually really cool that like you
it's
can
awesome.
Do that before the party. And
well,
then
so with our tickets, we actually get to, my aunt does not have an annual pass and she does not actually have a park ticket for that day. Same thing with my parents that are coming with us. But with the Oogie Boogie Bash ticket on that particular day, they can get in 4 hours before the party starts.
Oh, wow.
With the Oogie Boogie ticket. So I think that's a great value.
Yeah.
Some other days it's only 3 hours ahead of time, but still, that's awesome.
That is a good deal. I'll bet you she's excited to get that extra time.
She's very excited. Very excited. She called me last night and we made reservations for the two little girls that are going with us for the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique.
Oh, you're going to have to tell me how that is. Because yeah, so. I know what it's about, but like I've never like gone through the experience. Obviously, but like
you haven't.
No, but like I haven't even been with anybody who's gone through the experience. Yeah. So like I don't have any personal stories from anybody doing it. So you have to let me know how it is. And of course, are you going to be there for it?
I think that's the plan. I don't know. We might go hit up some other stuff while they're getting.
If you are
princess eyes,
you need to share it on our social stuff.
She did say it was really cool because last time we were there quite a few years ago, two other little girls in our family got to go to the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. And my aunt was with them, and she said it was very cute because all of the stylists that are in there, actually, they're fairy godmothers in training.
Yes.
And so they're learning how to be fairy godmothers, and they're practicing on all of the little girls that come into their boutique. So I think it's a very cute premise.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, Disney, you know, always telling a good story about things. And I, you know, the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, from what I've read and seen, it seems like it is fairly pricey, but they do such an amazing job. It's kind of like the lightsaber thing, where like you're kind of paying for the experience more than like what you kind of get out of it. But I'll tell you, I mean, I think even when we were there, I think, oh yeah, we saw one of the girls come out of that and walk by.
That was adorable when she came out, because there was this grand fanfare and we were all supposed to wave to the princess as she walked through
the little walkway over by the Princess Fantasy Fair.
Yeah, I was going to say by the Fantasy Fair. It was very cute. I felt bad because there was not very many people back there, so we made sure that we waved at her.
I think I like did like a little bow and said, Your Majesty.
You think you did? Yes, I think you did.
I don't know why. I was in a Disney mood that day for sure.
So back to the Oogie Boogie Bash. Everyone, if you guys are curious as to what's going on, I am going to try to keep our patrons updated through our Patreon page. I'm also going to be doing some updates during the party on our Instagram page. So if
I'll be
like
at home crying.
Follow along as to what's going on at the party. Be sure to log in and you can see it. But yeah, then of course we're going to obviously be talking about it next week too. So we'll share how I'm just so excited. This is so nerdy. I was looking at the Disneyland app because I've been like watching it to see what wait times for rides have been.
Sure. But how have they been?
Not bad. Good. They're still pretty low, in my opinion.
Sure.
But anyways, what I did notice was there was all sorts of extra little things to click on in the DCA map. So I started clicking on it, and they already have the treat trails mapped out.
Oh.
And there are a ton of them. Mm-hmm. And they're all over. So I was like, oh man, I already thought that there was a lot to do. And now there's all this extra, like, I thought there was like only a handful of treat trails. Oh no, there's like 20 of them, it looked like. I don't know. There was a lot.
So before you go, my question is, of the things you know about at this party, what are you most excited for? Ooh.
It's honestly a toss-up between Villainous, the World of Color show, and also the immersive treat trail villain grove that they've been building for months and months.
I think I agree with you that if I was going, I think I'm really excited to see how they execute the Villains Grove kind of thing. And I did see a clip on social media before recording tonight of the end, because they had cast member previews for Villainous.
Oh.
And I saw the end, and tonight's a media preview, so there'll be a lot more out like tomorrow. But I saw the last like 2 minutes of the show, and I thought it looked very good. It was nice because it looked like they did a lot of like original stuff for it. It wasn't like
it wasn't even, just scenes from movies.
Yeah, exactly. Like even like Fantasmic, where they like repurpose scenes. Mm-hmm. This actually seemed like they had like created stuff for it. So I'm excited to see what you think of it in person. And it seems to me also that they really utilize everything in the pier area in the thing.
Yeah.
So because she's going to a Halloween party, right, was the story. Mm-hmm. So at the end, where Mickey's face is on the Pixar pal around, it looks like a disco ball, and then it turns into a jack-o'-lantern, and I'm like, that's so cool. So I think it looks really cool. I wish I was going with you to see it, but James and I will hold down the fort here, and we'll do the news here, and then I think we're gonna probably have some stuff from a check-in from you and Alex for a discussion next week. So I'm very excited for you. I wish I was going. I feel like it's so funny because I feel like it was just a couple weeks ago we were there, and now you're going back.
I know. It's crazy. It's surreal to me.
It is surreal.
Well, there is a ton of knowledge to be had at the resort about Halloween and how the resort celebrates this holiday. Guests can learn all about it on Disney's Happiest Haunts Tour, which is available to book through Halloween. The tour takes you through both parks and covers the history of Halloween itself, as well as some resort-specific stories. The tour is 2.5 hours and takes place in the early evening through the season. For specific dates and time and to book your tour, visit the link in our show notes. I do want to add, I have seen on social media, you also get goodies during this too.
Yeah.
I thought that was very cool. There's a really neat pin that they
You get a pin
out.
Too? Mm-hmm. That's nice. Yep. I thought it was interesting because they're going to give you like the history of Halloween, which I think is kind of interesting in and of itself. And then they talk about kind of the history of Halloween at the resort and then some of the stories and stuff. So I feel like they're cramming a lot into 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. I do like that they're doing it at the early evening, so kind of like when it's starting to get dark, and like I assume, you know, when things are lighting up and stuff for the evening. So I think it's going to be a really cool tour. I wish, I wish you were there long enough to be able to book something like this.
Alex is doing it.
Oh, well, then you will have to. When? What day is he doing that?
I'm not sure if he's doing it he must be doing it before I get there, because he actually starts his trip like soon.
Oh,
and so he'll be almost done with his trip when we go to the Oogie Boogie.
So,
I'm very
you
excited
to talk to him
his,
about yep, it.
I'm very excited to pick his brain about this tour.
It's going
to
be a good episode next week, I think. Well, one of the most iconic parts of Halloween is the candy. Well, Disney has not disappointed again this year and has posted their candy guide to Halloween time at Disneyland. There are almost endless variations of the Poison Apple, Oogie Boogie, Maleficent, and more. Cake Pops, Rice Krispie Treats, Caramel Apples, and more make up the inventory this year. I have not seen so many things with Poison Apple and Oogie Boogie. I just feel like it's there on everything.
The thing that's so crazy to me is last week we reported on the food guide, which included a lot of like desserts. Mm-hmm. So I was like blown away when I saw that there was a whole separate guide just for candy type stuff, because there was a lot of sweets on the food guide. So I was like, oh my gosh. But
dentists are really loving Disney.
I think my favorite of everything that they listed, and it's just because it's classic, is the classic Poison Apple. I just love the look of the Poison Apple.
I can never get over it. And I saw them when we were at the resort, I saw them making treats like this. Mm-hmm. And I cannot get over, because they pump out dozens and dozens and dozens of these at a time. Mm-hmm. And they're done so artistically, like, and so well, and they're very consistent, it feels like, you know, that they always kind of look like that. And I feel like if I tried to, you know, I don't know, have you ever seen that show on Netflix, Nailed It? I feel like if I tried to do one of these, I'd be like, nailed it, and just be like a blob of frosting on there.
Terrible.
But it all looks good.
That's a good point, though. I'm going to have to make sure I walk back over to Pooh's Corner and see if I can catch them. I would love to watch them make Poison Apples. I'd probably sit back there forever.
Well,
I just think it's really the face, how they get the dripping and then the little face. And I just so cool.
You can also check it out at
the Marceline Confectionery.
Marceline Confectionery. Yep. They were also doing that when we were there. So
with the Grand Californian having Oogie Boogie in the lobby, the Disneyland Hotel sporting the Haunted Mansion, what's going on over at the Paradise Pier Hotel? Well, Ursula has moved into the lobby. Her tentacles are very large inflatables, like ginormous, with an abundance of banners and other printed graphics with Ursula on them. Oh, with Ursula, Flotsam and Jetsam, and others all around. You really get the feeling of being in the Sea Witch's lair.
I was surprised to actually see this today when we were looking at the stories, because honestly, like, they report all the time, we see stuff that it's the Disneyland Hotel has something going on, or the Grand Californian. There seems to never really be anything going on at Paradise Pier. So I'm very happy to see that the Paradise Pier is finally getting something. And I think this looks amazing. Like, because Ursula's a villain, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing that I find so cool about it is, so the Oogie Boogie display, I mean, hours and hours of work went into creating that. And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But really, Ursula is actually a pretty simple thing that they put together, but it fills the entire, like, lobby area here. Just very, very cool.
It is so cool.
And it looks like, so for those of you that haven't seen photos, it reminds me a lot of the ending scene. It's not exactly, but it reminds me of the ending scene, or one of the last scenes in The Little Mermaid, where Ursula becomes like giant.
Oh, yeah.
And she like wraps the ship in her tentacles, because they actually have like
a masthead
and like parts of a ship. And it looks like her tentacles are coming up and around that. So it looks a lot like kind of the one of the last scenes that we see Ursula in the movie.
You know, and something else that for some reason I thought about, but I don't know if everybody else would have thought about, is it goes really well with Paradise Pier because Paradise Pier is all like ocean or sea themed, and of course the Sea Witch.
I'm sure that was intentional.
I'm sure. But I'm just really glad to see the Paradise Piers getting something because, like I said, it seems like the Grand Californian and the Disneyland Hotel always have something, and it kind of gets forgotten about. Because I feel like, do we ever talk? I don't feel like we like never talk about the Paradise Pier.
It doesn't seem like not very often. So
good on
them. Paradise Pier.
Well, popcorn buckets have been very popular this year, but so have sipper cups. The new must-have is a Jack Skellington sipper. Jack is 2 feet long and has a number of moving parts. His arms and legs move, the straw folds out of his back, and could hold a mere 8 ounces of fluid in his body. That was the biggest surprise to me, because 8 ounces is not very much liquid.
Well,
And well, you can get your own Jack Zipper for $21.06 after annual pass discount at the Harbor Galley in New Orleans Square.
So I'm surprised that it's even that big, because after seeing photos of this, and I'm really curious to see it in person, I don't understand where the liquid goes. I mean, I understand it must go in his body, mm-hmm. but it doesn't look like it's that big, even for 8 ounces. I don't know. It looks so small. Like it does not look like our traditional standard sipper cup that we have seen of other things.
The biggest,
it's a little like, it hurts my head a little bit.
The biggest concern I have is, how the heck do you have something in this and like set it down?
His legs move, so I'm sure you sit him down and he like sit, you know, you fold his legs out.
Maybe.
Kind of, you know, like a doll.
Sure. It just doesn't look very like user friendly, I guess. I mean, it's a cool concept. I don't know. You'll have to let me know what you think.
It's super popular, though. Mm-hmm. I'm a little sad because it's Jack's angry face. It's like the mean mm-hmm. Jack Skellington face. It's not like the smiling.
You wanted a happy
Jack.
One?
I like that. You know what would be cool? Maybe this will come out later, is if he had,
different head.
Had two different heads, so you could switch it out. So you could have the mean, sinister-looking Jack, or you could have the sweet and happy-looking Jack.
I'm trying to think, like, because we've had the Oogie Boogie popcorn bucket, and we've had the Jack Sipper. Wasn't there like a zero popcorn bucket a couple years ago or something like that? I feel like there was something zero. Because I was like, what would make a better sipper than Jack?
Ooh, you know, we need a little Lock, Shock, and Barrel in our lives, too.
Oh, they could do like they did with the Hitchhiking Ghost. They could do one sipper, one popcorn bucket, one beignet holder.
There is an idea for you, Disney, next year.
Send us the check our way.
This week, some new images have appeared online showing Poe Dameron's black and orange X-Wing, along with BB-8 that will be in the queue for the Rise of the Resistance attraction early next year. The X-Wing is deep inside of the Resistance Forest at the entrance to the cave where the attraction begins. BB-8 will interact with guests waiting to take part in the new, highly anticipated attraction. As a reminder, the Rise of Resistance attraction opens on December 5th, 2019 in Hollywood Studios over in Florida, and on January 17th, 2020 in Disneyland.
So I was actually surprised to see this when I was looking at news today, because I saw the picture first. I didn't read the headline. I just saw the picture. And I was like, where was this in the land? Because I was like,
totally
we saw a lot of
this.
Things. But this is kind of in that back area that right now is kind of cordoned off, and you can't really get to it because they've got cast members and everything kind of hanging out.
Yeah, deep in the queue would be a good way of explaining
it. But it's kind of, so they have like the area that looks like a hangar, and it's kind of across from that.
Looking at the aerial view, it's really not that far off where everybody walks. Like, it's not far off the main pathway,
right.
But with all of the trees and the rock work that they have, it's 100% hidden.
I'm really excited to see the interaction with BB-8 and people in the queue, because it's cool to have like little things like that. I wonder if it'll be like, I know in Disney World at the Little Mermaid attraction out there, they've got like Scuttle like talking with people in line to kind of kill time, and like, so he'll like kind of talk to people while they're waiting in line. So I'm hoping that BB-8 will kind of be like that, where like it kind of resets your mind thinking like, oh, we've been in this line for a long time and people are just kind of watching BB-8.
Plus, it's BB-8. How cool is he? You can't, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't meet BB-8 out in the, you know, in any other part of the land. So to meet the cool little guy, you got to hang out with him while you're waiting to go experience Rise of the Resistance.
Well, not only that, but they also said that just like the A-Wing and the other different vehicles and stuff that are, or the other starships that are in Galaxy's Edge, Poe Dameron might show up and like be working on it while he's in the queue too. So
very cool.
Yeah,
that's what a cool way to like bring some magic to an outdoor queuing area, mm-hmm. because we really enjoyed the queue. I know I really enjoyed the queue
for Millennium Falcon
for Smuggler's Run.
I did,
but I do have to say the outside portion was not nearly as interesting as when we were actually inside.
I will agree with that
of the area. So thankfully we were in the line and it was moving very well, so we weren't stuck standing in one spot with nothing really to look at while we were outside. But so I think this is really cool that you've got more to look at than just the scenery.
Yeah, and I think it's cool that it's hidden back there and like nobody's seen it yet. Yeah. Well, we love taking the tram to the parks from Mickey and Friends and the Pixar Palace parking structures, but there's finally a new way to make the trip. The pedestrian bridge over Magic Way opened to the public on Friday. The new bridge is 174 feet long and is followed by a gradual slope down to the ground level where it meets up with a surface level winding path. The new path is separated from the downtown Disney parking area by lush landscaping and is very well lit. The path brings guests to the north downtown Disney security screening area.
I don't know why, but I'm excited to go hang, like, to go see this.
Have I rubbed off on you?
No.
With parking stuff?
It's not as exciting as the parking garage was for you.
Sure.
But it's just, it just looks really cool and really nice, and I don't know. I just want to go see it.
I always love walking around the Disney resort because they do such, the horticulture team does such an amazing job. This grass looks great. The trees and the plants they have look great. All of their lighting. I mean, this is just going to be lit up crazy.
Right.
The only thing that I've heard that people kind of complain about and thought was weird was that the walls on the ramps part of it are high, which is good because you don't want like kids falling
safety,
off and stuff.
Yeah.
But somebody mentioned that like, oh, there's no light poles or anything. So like, how is it lit? Well, there's actually light built into the wall and it kind of shoots it down, which is there to cut down on light pollution.
Interesting.
So I think it's cool.
Well, and what, you know, you just need to see where you're walking. You don't need to see 10 feet in the air as well.
The only other concern I saw online from people was that the bridge itself is kind of narrow, and they thought that if there was a large group of people, like at the end of the night or in the beginning in the morning, that it might kind of be a choke point
a
because everything else is kind of open.
Sure.
But especially with like strollers and stuff. But I don't know. I feel like if you have a stroller and stuff, you're probably taking the tram. You're probably not walking, but we'll see. I like it.
It'll be interesting to see how much use the path gets and how much use the tram still gets. You know, will it split? Will there still be a lot of traffic that is going towards the tram? Are a lot of people going to opt for the walkway instead?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting because I almost feel that maybe in the mornings, the walkway will be popular because everyone's got fresh legs, fresh feet. However, I do think at night, a lot of people are going to probably opt for the tram. I know I will after, you know, you're standing all day, walking all day. It's nice to just kind of sit back and relax for a little bit.
The two things that I think kind of go against the path, because I think it's really nice. And like I said, I think it's beautiful. I really want to walk down it. However, one of the problems is... like we had when we were trying to get in through Downtown Disney is their security screening does not seem as efficient as like the main screening because I feel like they don't have like the capacity there necessarily. And where the security screening is, you're at the opposite end of Downtown Disney. At least with the tram, you're almost kind of near the entrance.
That's true.
Because if you go this way, you have to walk through all of Downtown Disney. And that can add quite a bit of distance. But you know what? If you're going to be walking, like you said, fresh legs in the morning, you got all this energy. You're going to be walking around the park all day anyway. What's another few feet?
Arendelle Aqua is the next color trend to come to the resort. This icy shade of aqua has its own spirit jersey, ears, backpack, a popcorn bucket, as well as some other merch. Along with all these merch options, there's a variety of treats inspired by the new color, too. You can try a blue churro, which is coated with a hint of cotton candy, a buttercream, blueberry, and cream-filled macaron. And a Mickey-filled shortbread cookie with mixed berry jam topped with white chocolate drizzle.
So is that shortbread cookie the one that I was looking
That's
at?
That's the one that like looks too beautiful to eat. It looks like you get it from Starbucks.
Well, doesn't it look like
it almost
like glitter?
Looks like stained glass or something. It's gorgeous.
It looks very good. The only thing I'm concerned about, because we had shortbread cookies in Galaxy's Edge, I'm hoping that it's a better shortbread cookie than what they had in Galaxy's Edge.
Well, but this is a Starbucks one.
Even better.
It's not a Galaxy's Edge Batu.
I just love the like
cookie.
The like glittery shininess of it.
The filling looks very shimmery. It's very cool because it's Mickey shaped. It is like a sandwich type cookie. We've seen this style. They do have these style cookies. It looks like it's called a Linzer cookie. I'm sorry if I totally butchered that, but it's a full cookie on the bottom, filling, and then it's got the Mickey shaped cookie, you know, the top, but there's a cutout in the center. So you can actually like peek in and see this beautiful filling. And Tag's right. It's like, it's shimmery, it's glittery. It's beautiful.
I want it.
I would honestly feel bad like biting into it.
I also like the aqua popcorn buckets because actually the first time I saw these, I thought they were clear because one of our supporters, Richard, actually got one of these this week and was sharing it in our chat. And I remember thinking that I really liked the design of it, but I didn't realize that this was one of the Arendelle aqua buckets. So the like blue coating on the churro, the color's kind of turning me off, but I'm sure it's great.
It's interesting because I feel like the photo that we found on Disney Food Blog maybe wasn't the most pretty looking churro.
Oh, sure.
Or they're having issues with the sugar actually sticking to the churro because it's not very evenly coated in this photo. I don't know. I'm kind of curious, though, because it's blue and it's got a hint of cotton candy. So is it like a blue cotton candy, like a blue raspberry cotton candy flavored churro? Hmm.
I don't know.
I feel like
you'll have to test it and find out.
I was going
to
say, I feel like Vern will try that, but he won't be there.
The macaron, this one sounds delicious to me. The buttercream, blueberry, and cream filling. Like, you're going to have to try one of these for me.
It's a Mickey-shaped macaron. And, of course, it's Arendelle aqua-colored. But then it has little snowflakes drawn on it and little sprinkles of sugar. So, very simple design, but the filling sounds
delightful. It does.
Delightful.
And this one actually looks... Because the alien macaron I got was kind of large. Actually seems like more doable for one person. Because I shared it with three people and I thought that there was still a lot of macaron there. So, and you know me, I love macarons. But you'll have to try these for me. Well, what is 9 feet tall, made out of 7,000 food cans containing jalapenos, green chilies, olives, rice, beans, and baby food? Our favorite toy cowboy, Woody, of course. The Disneyland Resort design and engineering team constructed Woody at the South Coast Plaza in Costa Mesa, California, as part of the 2019 Canstruction Orange County Design Build Competition, which benefits the Orange County Food Bank. This is the 12th year that Disneyland has participated, bringing the total amount of cans donated to over 75,000.
Crazy. Crazy. The thing, this is just really impressive to me because not only is it just, you know, this awesome donation that they're doing, but it really looks like Woody. I mean, even if you didn't, you know, even if I didn't know it was him, I think, like, considering what he's made out of, it's incredible to me that he is still very recognizable.
I just want to know how they, like, defied gravity on some of these things. Engineering.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. The other thing that I think is amazing, too, is it just took them over 6 hours to create this thing, too. I would be so afraid to sneeze next to it.
Yeah, I could see they're putting like the last thing and you sneeze and there goes the whole thing. 6 hours of work. I think this is great. We're going to talk a little bit later about some of the things that Disney is doing like in the community. And I remember, too, that we also reported on this last year. I remember they did some other design. I don't remember what it was now, but this is it's really cool that there's the different departments inside Disney that do these different things and support them. 75,000 cans is over 12 years is quite a bit. So I'm glad that Disney's doing it.
Well, with the new marquee for the Sunset Showcase Theater and Mickey's PhilharMagic Plane, where or when is the Maleficent sneak peek going to play? Well, because of the new marquee and the digital projection in the venue, they can perform PhilharMagic during the day show and have the sneak peek at night. That is cool.
Yeah.
The sneak peek will begin on September 27th and run at least through October 18th when the new movie opens in theaters. That's brilliant. And we were talking about that, actually, when we were at the resort and we were standing right in front of the new marquee. And we just said, oh, how nice is that? Because they don't have to. It's just a screen. It's a really nice screen. Don't get me wrong.
It's beautiful.
It's a very nice screen.
It really brings the attention to the theater there, too, because before, with it being kind of tucked around the corner, this is really nice. I love the fact that they are not like not having Mickey's PhilharMagic, because before they would just not have whatever was supposed to be in there. So I think it's cool that like during the day when kids want to watch Mickey's PhilharMagic, they can. And at night, because Maleficent's a little scarier,
darker,
for younger ones.
Yeah.
So having it in the evening would be perfect time to have that kind of sneak peek. So hopefully in the future that they do more of this, because I don't like shutting down an attraction to like promote a movie, but I think this is a great compromise.
Yeah, I do too. The nice thing too is in the kind of waiting area that they have for the Sunset Showcase Theater, it is very large. Mm-hmm. I saw a sneak peek of The Incredibles 2 there when Vern and I were there for Pixar Fest, and they did have plenty of room to display things. Mm-hmm. They had different like models of the characters that they had displayed and kind of like concept art models, I guess is how I'd describe it.
Sure.
So they had a show, they were able to show off some of those pieces, because I know the nice thing when they had it over in Disneyland is they had a very large area to show different props and,
sure,
you know, kind of have a display go along.
That waiting area is large. I mean, when we went and saw PhilharMagic there, I mean, that area is huge. So they can definitely put some stuff in there. Plus, they have that hallway. Mm-hmm. And now they have, like, that red carpet area. Maybe they could even put some stuff out there that's, like, weather resistant or whatever. Yeah. Or, like, if there's maybe a movie that they have, like, a vehicle or something for, they mm-hmm. can park there. Mm-hmm. So I like it. Well, as we reported on previously, the fuel rod locations in the parks may be losing the free battery exchange. Signage on the kiosks in the parks have been slowly phasing out the free unlimited wording. At this time, the exchanges are still available at no cost, but don't expect that to be the case for long.
This makes me so sad because Vern just bought one of these when we were there for our last trip.
He exchanged it a few times.
He did. He did exchange it quite a few times. I'm going to take it with me when I go this weekend. So hopefully, everyone cross your fingers for me that it'll still be free this weekend when I'm there. If not, I will let you guys all know that it's changed.
Yeah.
Well, as we have been reporting on, the French Fry Rock formations at the entrance to Tomorrowland are continuing to come down. The left side of the entrance to the land is slowly wrapping up as the tapered sidewalk has been revealed this week, nearly completing Project Stardust enhancements to the hub. The right side of the entrance is now behind walls to begin removal there. No word yet on what will happen to the rest of Tomorrowland.
So this is pretty cool. I'm glad to see that it's coming down. There was something interesting that on the as you're looking into the land, on the left-hand side, they actually have like some type of maintenance building or control building that the rocks kind of concealed before. So they're kind of working around the fact that I don't think that's movable because they haven't done anything with it.
They're going to have to do something.
So they got
to
work around it. Mm-hmm. The other side, though, should really clear and open that up. Unfortunately, right now, because of them now having two sections that they're doing, the parade route has opened up. Because remember, we had problems getting across with the parade route there. But now, because of that tapering, that section has opened up. But now, when they're working on this other side, it makes a real pinch point to get into Tomorrowland.
Oh,
so moving around the hub is a lot easier now, but getting into the land, hopefully,
more difficult.
Hopefully it won't be too long until they're done with this part of the project.
You know, don't get me wrong, I'm happy that all of the rock formations are leaving.
Yes.
But I was actually surprised because when we were there, they had just taken down the main one that was in the middle, which was really the biggest pinch point.
Right.
I kind of felt that the project was going to end there, that they were going to leave the side rocks alone and just open up the center. Because really that's where the biggest traffic flow is. So don't get me wrong. I'm glad that they're all going, but I'm pleasantly surprised that they're all going, especially because, like you said, there is that kind of like service building that they were kind of concealing on the one side. I'm curious to see what they're going to do now, if they're going to maybe move that, remove it, put it somewhere else, who knows, or are they going to do something else in that area to kind of conceal that service area?
I was actually surprised that there was a building there because I didn't know it was concealed so well. I didn't even
Disney
know.
Disney magic.
Yep, exactly. The other thing that is not Disneyland related, but popped in my head as we were talking about this, Tomorrowland in Magic Kingdom got a new entrance sign just today. So because they're kind of retheming, they're kind of going through and retheming their Tomorrowland for Tron when the Tron coaster opens in 2021. So it's going to be interesting to kind of keep an eye on the Tomorrowland in Magic Kingdom to maybe get a glimpse of what they might do in Disneyland. Because the way the theming that they're doing out there that I'm hoping they kind of bring here is that kind of retro future look.
Yes,
kind of like Tomorrowland had before the 1998 renovation, which I think people would prefer over what we have now even. So, but anyway, keep an eye on that if you're interested to see maybe some hints of what Tomorrowland might end up being in Disneyland. Disneyland President Josh D'Amaro gave a keynote address at the OC Forum last week where he detailed some of the impact that the resort has had in the community. Overall, the resort has created $8.5 billion in economic impact in Southern California during the 2018 fiscal year. Disney employs more than 78,000 people in the area, with 73% of those jobs being in Orange County. In addition, the resort generated almost $510 million in state and local tax revenue. Since 2013, the economic impact has increased by 50%. D'Amaro also stated that they raised about $2.5 million for the Children's Hospital Orange County through the recent Chalk Walk and completed the 11th Kaboom Playground in Anaheim. Anaheim City spokesperson Mike Lister stated on CNBC that the relationship between the city and Disney has, quote, been reset.
Wow. Those numbers are just, I mean, you know that Disney employs a lot of people. You know that Disney makes a lot of money with their resort. But wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing I didn't put in the script there was the fact that 162 million of that 510 million went right into Anaheim's general fund for taxes this last for the 2018 buckets, fiscal year. Yeah. So that's a lot of money.
That's a little chunk of change. Mm-hmm. That's pocket change.
The thing that I really liked reading about this, though, was the Anaheim City spokesperson basically saying that, like, between the elections, yeah. which, let's be honest here, the elections, every candidate that ran in the election that Disney supported mm-hmm. got in. So, of course, the relationship's going to be better just because of that. But I like the fact that they're getting back to a good relationship because there's a lot of projects still that Disney wants to do. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was the Eastern Gateway project. They're eventually going to want to build a hotel again. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on that I think, like, they need that good relationship on both ends. So hopefully Disney continues to do all of this goodwill stuff, and hopefully the community benefits as much as they can.
And let's just, we had reported on this and talked about this a little bit at length, the history of the relationship between the city of Anaheim and Disney. So it is nice because it did seem like it was a very tense relationship for the past few years. So I'm glad that it's maybe the tension's easing up a little bit and we're working together a little bit better.
Yeah. And I think it's going to benefit everybody that, you know, it, I don't think it benefits anybody if you're just like at odds with each other, because Disney can't do anything. The community can't do anything. People are losing out.
Yeah, I kind of get to a gridlock. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with some Disney trivia. He'll read us the question. We'll attempt to answer him. Then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. What do you have for us this week, James?
Well, now that Haunted Mansion holiday is up, I figured I'd give you a nice little question with that. So, what is Jack Skellington holding in his hand at the entrance?
Pumpkin?
A snowflake.
Oh, I think you're right.
That was a good noise.
Well, you took the picture of it because he was there when,
it spins.
I was too distracted with Disneyland.
Everything else that's exciting.
Oh, we were on our way to Galaxy's Edge. That's what it was.
Was that what it was?
Yep.
All right, now on to the listener questions. From Barbara B, what are the names of the two roads that intersect Main Street?
Oh,
Center
shoot.
Street. Center Street and...
You know, it's terrible. I'm going to 100% be honest. I looked at them last time and I thought, you need to remember these. This is really cool. I need to like store this back. I don't remember.
Prime trivia questions right there.
I know it's question, Barbara. I know one is Center Street because
the one to the right is.
I remember thinking, oh, Center Street, like that's easy. And then
I feel like the other one, I don't know why, the other one I think has something to do with flowers.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
But maybe it's Flower Street. there was that whole section behind Town Square that was going to be Edison Square.
Yeah.
But I don't, that's not what it is now. So I don't think it's gonna be that, but I know Center Street. So I think I get half a point because Center Street, I'm thinking.
If you're right.
If I'm right.
You might be right. You might be totally wrong.
And I'll go with Flower Street too, because that just sounds good.
I thought it was like floral, but that's okay.
Oh, maybe.
You know, whatever.
Because it's where the flower cart is and the fruit cart and all that.
But I thought that was Center Street.
Maybe. I don't know. Don't ask me. I was the one that stared at it and thought, oh, I need to remember this. And
that didn't.
Yeah.
It works so well.
We've done so well. Did you see Vern like taking notes or something?
No, it was just I was waiting for you, somebody doing something. I don't even remember what it was. And I was just kind of, you know, just taking it on Main Street. And I was
story
like,
of our trip.
Wow. I just always just, I'm like so tunnel
vision. There's actually a street sign?
When I'm going up Main Street.
Where's the street sign?
On the corner.
Where a
street sign should be. So I just get so tunnel vision. I just like blaze past
everything.
Cause I, you know, either that or I'm just focusing on the castle, focusing on where I want to go, whatever. I just kind of like sprint up Main Street just because I'm so excited. So when we were actually we were lingering around and moseying around Main Street that Thursday, I think.
I think I was putting stuff in the locker.
Yep, I was noticing these things.
Because that's when Vern was looking up like names of different things and what things were advertising in the windows.
It wasn't that day. It was the day that we watched the Dapper Dans hung out and did Main Street things.
I'm going to kick myself because I know this answer. It's just not coming to me.
At least you weren't staring at the actual sign.
Well,
you're both going to kick yourself. Don't worry. All right. Our third question comes from Richard S. Up to date, how many sitting presidents have visited Disneyland Park in Anaheim?
How many city presidents?
Sitting presidents. Like people that have been president. So Nixon. Like they had to be president when they visited?
How many sitting presidents have visited Disneyland Park in Anaheim?
But is that what sitting means? Like that they were in office when they visited?
I'm going to say a dozen.
That means, yes, they are currently in office.
Okay.
Currently?
Nixon.
A sitting president is a president who is currently president.
None.
Thus, they are sitting.
I think one. I think Nixon. Because I don't think anybody else would. Because the Secret Service was there, remember? Because it was the monorail. They like took off with him and the Secret Service was like, because they didn't think he was supposed to leave the station when the monorail got dedicated.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't president then, because Nixon was president after, so he was vice president.
I'm reading into this as in none. I'm saying none. I'm thinking sitting as in
current. I'm going to say one, because I said one already.
All right, our last question comes from Carrie M. There are flags all along Main Street, USA, and at the train station. How many American flags are there?
Oh, boy.
There's one on the Emporium. There's one on the train. There's one above City Hall. Was that three? There's probably one on the fire station. One on Coke Corner. We're just talking Main Street?
Just on Main Street and the train station.
Not during the summer holiday where they have bunting and flags and stuff everywhere?
That's not a flag.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
They have flags on the poles.
I see what you're saying.
I'll say five.
Five. All right.
You said five?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Came to the consensus. We'll see if you're right after this week's discussion topic.
So this week we have listener Tim joining us, and Tim is actually stationed over in the UK right now. He's part of the Air Force. So he's going to talk to us about some things to do with the military along with Disneyland. So welcome, Tim. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your day for this.
Hey, thank you so much, Tej and Teresa. Yeah, as we were just talking about offline, it's actually 10 p.m. where I'm recording,
yeah,
and it's the middle of the afternoon for you. But we were able to line up our calendars and our clocks and actually get together. So this is wonderful, and I'm looking forward to it.
We extra appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. I think we've been trying to schedule this with you for a while now, but you, with your move and everything, we understand the difficulties. And then, of course,
with our trip.
So everybody's been moving around a lot.
The stars
absolutely
aligned. So, Tim, as you probably know, since you've been listening to the show now for a little bit, we do always like to ask some questions of our guests. So first question that we'd like to ask you is, what is your Disney story? Just kind of tell us kind of how you fell in love with either the company, the movies, or the park.
Yeah, definitely. I was a fan of the movies, of course, as a youngster. And I know that we went to Disneyland when I was quite young. And then we went to Walt Disney World again shortly after that. But really, that was all kind of before, I guess, my formative years and before I was really making memories. Then my wife and I, we have two children. And we took them, I think on their sixth birthday, with my folks, we went to Walt Disney World and had just a fantastic time there. And then over the course of the next 2 years, we ended up taking them to Disneyland and then back to Walt Disney World. That's when we were living in Florida. And then shortly after that, we moved to New Mexico. And it was close enough in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to make it a weekend trip.
Nice.
We started driving out to Long Beach, where my wife's grandmother lives. So we would see her in Long Beach, then drive out to Anaheim, spend a day at the parks, and we'll talk about how I would get tickets. But we would do that two or three times a year. We did that for 5 years when we were in Albuquerque. And then after that, I moved to Tucson, which is a little bit closer, not too much, but it's still a weekend trip. So we did that for 3 years.
Wow.
When we lived in Tucson. And so really built up a plethora of visits and a bunch of memories of going to Disneyland.
That's amazing.
Very cool.
That's so cool that you were not exactly, I wouldn't say, you know, you're not in the Southern California area, but the fact that you were close enough that you could make it over to the parks over the course of a weekend or something like that, and multiple times a year, that's amazing. I wish we were close enough to do that.
If only.
It was wonderful, and my family, they're all road warriors, so we would get in the car, and I would always be behind the wheel, but we would, you know, hit the road and drive for 10 or 11 hours, and and show up in Long Beach, and my wife's grandma would be waiting for us and have a great time with her, and then roll to Anaheim after that. And then we might just roll back, you know, Sunday night, and then Monday morning, everybody's getting up early and going back to school and back to work.
A long weekend, but I'll bet worth it.
Oh, yeah, it's always worth it.
For the next question here, we always ask, when you go to the park on your first day, which way do you go in the park? So we're in Disneyland. You go down Main Street. Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go kind of north left over kind of towards Frontierland? Do you go through the castle to Fantasyland? Do you go right to Tomorrowland? What's kind of your plan of attack on your first day?
Yeah, exactly. So we always go to Disneyland on the first day if we're going there for multiple days or right off the bat. And if it were up to me, I think I would probably do things a little bit differently, you know, visit by visit. But there's three other people in my group, and my family's going to be listening to this. And they always pull me straight into Tomorrowland to go get on Space Mountain. And so we usually try and do Space Mountain once before the lines build up. Yeah. And then while we're waiting in line the first time, get another fast pass and do it again right off the bat when we're done with the first ride and see what happens after that. It's definitely every time we go straight to Space Mountain.
Well, you know what, Tim? We kind of did that on our trip. We kind of, in the mornings, a couple times we picked an attraction and then we got a fast pass for it as well. And so we could just kind of back-to-back it. I've never done it that way before, but it was actually kind of cool because, of course, the first time you go through on your first day, you've got so much going on and you miss some things. But when you get to go on it again the second time right afterwards, then you're kind of excited and you kind of catch more of it and you more kind of work your way in. So but that's interesting, though. You're one of the few people that have not gone towards Adventureland. So good job.
I do feel the pull of Adventureland, but I guess the pull of my family is stronger.
Yeah. Well, they outnumber you, I guess.
That's certainly true.
So, Tim, what's your favorite attraction? It sounds like your family really enjoys Space Mountain, but is that your favorite attraction?
I think I'd probably have to say my favorite would be the Matterhorn.
Oh.
I am a taller guy, and so the bobsleds are not super comfortable, but right. I do really enjoy the queue is wonderful. The music is really cool to listen to as you go through. And the other thing is I have a great memory of going with one of my children up into Matterhorn while the fireworks were starting off in the evening.
Very nice.
I remember going in and out of the mountain and seeing, you know, every time we peeled out of the mountain, seeing the fireworks bursting above us and then peel back into the mountain. And of course, that only probably happened two or three times, but it's one of those memories that really sticks with you. So I've had some really great times in there. I guess I'll say that's my favorite.
Yeah, I can see how an experience like that would definitely be. Sometimes it's those experiences, those unique experiences like that, like going and seeing the fireworks that really makes an impact on you. I'm trying to think. I thought we had an experience. Well, Splash Mountain's always been cool to me, but like now after we went, we had that whole story with Cats for the exchange student because he got really, really wet. So we have that story that we tell every time he's told somebody a story about going to Disneyland. That's been the story.
I just can't figure out what the situation with Splash Mountain is in terms of what makes the log actually get wet. Is it the distribution of where people sit in the thing? Because sometimes the person who's sitting up front gets absolutely nothing at all. And sometimes they do get a pretty good wave that comes right over.
Well, you know what I found is people always think that last drop is what gets you really wet. And I found pretty consistently that every time I ride it, that it's the little drop that's like in the inside portion that like you hit. And as it slows down, there's this wave that just comes over the side right into your lap.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so so that's what I was telling Casper when we were on. I said, this will be the one that gets you. It's not the drop, I'm telling you. But he also got pretty good with the drop. So, but you're right though, because Teresa thought when we were on it that the distribution would be different and that maybe he wouldn't get as wet or something because we talked about that. And then we went on it a second time and we tried to move people around to see. And I think you're right, Tim. Who knows? It's like mystic how this thing works. Nobody knows.
I wonder if the cast members that work at have eventually been able to figure it out, you know, and they'll take bets and say, oh, I bet these guys come back and they're just clobbered.
Well, A funny story I don't think we've told on the show yet, but not a Splash Mountain story, but we went on Grizzly River Run. And we sat, Vern, producer Vern, sat and watched for a little while after we got off of it, and it didn't happen to anybody else, but we got through the entire thing pretty dry. I mean, we were a little wet, but not bad. Mm-hmm. But we got past that last drop, and we were in that area where the geysers are. And I don't know how it happened because we didn't see any other tubes after this, but right before we got to one of the geysers, it went off, soaked half of the boat, continued to spray as we went over it, and then sprayed on the other side. So the other half of the boat got completely drenched. Not dry anywhere. But we sat, Vern sat and watched, and nobody else had that happen to them. So I don't know what happened.
We were joking that there was a cast member somewhere that controls it and decided that they were going to make sure we had a really good time.
That would be a good job. Maybe that's the job I want to have.
Right? There you go.
Maybe it was nice, though, because it was so hot.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to have that. And you dry off fairly quick. But I did not expect that.
Daytime, you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we didn't go on at night, luckily, so.
So, Tim, I did have a question. I want to go back to the Matterhorn.
Oh.
So, what did you think when they just, we can still say recently, when they swapped out Harold for the original Harold, who is now living over in DCA,
at
Guardians of the Galaxy, versus the new version of Harold that we have in the Matterhorn?
You know, I guess I'm in favor of both Heralds. I don't really come down very strongly one way or the other.
Gotcha.
The last time I rode it before this, they've upgraded the animatronics since that last time I was there. Cause this one was like lunged at you and moved a lot.
Yeah,
and I was more.
Yeah. He kind of like sweeps at you with his arm, right?
Yeah. Last time I had gone on that, I remembered his eyes like glowed or something
that's the
thing.
Original Herald.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I like the newer one.
New Herald.
But
and what's your thought of how they've swapped up the queue? I think you already said that you really enjoy the cube.
I think it's just kind of more pleasant, you know, that it still is not big enough to possibly contain all the people that sometimes want to wait in it.
Yeah.
So it still will sometimes sweep around the base of the mountain, you know, around to the south there and then up towards the rest of Fantasyland or over towards Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
But it does sort of, I guess it just keeps everybody closer because when you're just standing against the wrought iron fence, it almost just seems like you're at generic amusement park. You know, like you're not in line for Matterhorn. But when you're actually in the crisscrosses where, you know, they've got the carved wood and the music playing, then there's a lot more theming going on.
Yeah, I think it's really nice. I agree with you.
You know what I noticed when we went was I did not realize that there was that much room there to do the queue that the way they did it, because it seemed like there was so much more room there than there was before, because I was under the impression from memory last time I had gone that the only way you could put people was around the mountain because there wasn't enough room there. But I think they did nice job with it. It's very nice.
Oh, and then one last question on the Matterhorn for you too, Tim. Do you have a favorite side? Do you prefer the Tomorrowland side or do you prefer the Fantasyland side?
I think I prefer the Fantasyland side. Is that the side? Obviously, I'm not much of an expert on it. Is that the side where you end up going like through the water at the end? Or it kind of makes the splash?
Both sides end up going through the water.
But I think the side he's talking about is the one that you get there's a little bit more water. Yeah.
Where you get kind of get wet.
Yeah.
That's the Tomorrowland side.
I like the Tomorrowland side because it has the one section of the track where you come around a corner and it dips under the other track. And so to me, it seems a little wilder. I like that side. But
My family,
the side that we were on.
Yep.
My, you know, we go on it a fair amount, but my family for years, I guess we just kind of space out when it comes time to actually board and then ride because we didn't really process that there were two sides.
Oh, right.
For a long time until, I don't know, somebody saw it on, you know, a YouTube video or something like that. So I guess we just kind of get lost in the moment.
Well, that's good, though.
That is a good way to do it.
Sure, yeah.
So now we're going to talk about some of the things that Tim kind of has a little bit of experience with, which is from being in the military and being in the Air Force, there's a lot of things that Disney does that kind of is like a nod or a salute to the military. So some of the things we'll talk about is like discounts, some special events that have happened. And then something that Teresa and I actually experienced the whole thing of while we were there was the flag retreat ceremony. We'll probably get to that towards the end. So what are some of the things, Tim, that you've experienced with how Disney handles the military. Do they do a good job? What are kind of some of the things that they do? And how do you feel about it, I guess?
Sure. So the big thing that Disney Corporation does is for close on 20 years now, they offer what they call the military salute, which is a special ticket and ticket price, which is available to the military member, as well as what they call the dependents, the military member spouses and children, essentially, or if you have any dependent parents, they're eligible as well.
Oh, neat.
But it started shortly after September 11th, 2001, and it was offered once. And then I think there were a couple years when it was not offered, and then it came back. But it's kind of gone through a few different iterations. The current iteration is basically a 3-day or a 4-day park hopper pass, and that's available for Disneyland as well as Walt Disney World. And the great thing about both of those, but especially for me, for Disneyland, is that you can get the 3-day or the 4-day park hopper tickets, but they're eligible for use on any 4 days throughout the year. And the days don't have to be all clustered together. Like to go to the turnstile and buy a 4-day pass, you know, I think you have to use those all within 14 days.
Yeah.
So I would get the 4-day pass for and you can get up to 6 as a military member. So I would get 4 of those for the family, and we could go one day in January, for example, and then in May, and then September, and then again in October or something like that. And I think there's a 1-week blackout period over Southern California spring break, and maybe another one just around Christmas time. I'm actually looking at the website right now, and I think it's for Disneyland, it's only the Southern California spring break. So you have a lot of flexibility on when you want to go.
That's really nice.
And the value of it is a little bit less than if you were to buy the 3 or the 4 day park hoppers as well. So I would get those every year, and we would just make a point of going and taking advantage of that. Another thing that Disney does, specifically Disney, is discounts on Disney-owned hotels. So these discounts are much better. And I think if you guys have been to Walt Disney World lately, you know, it's just much more useful to stay in a Disney hotel in Walt Disney World,
definitely.
Right?
Yep.
Whereas in Disneyland, you got so many other options, and some of those options are much closer to the gates than, for example, the Disneyland hotel is. So there are some discounts available to hotels. We took advantage of those once or twice, but after that, we kind of figured out to stay, you know, right on the hotels on Harbor. And a lot of those will either have a military rate that's available, or I can call my ticket office on base, and they may have a pre-made reservation window with that hotel and a special rate. So
that's cool.
Disney, as well as the supporting, you know, concessioners around there, do a pretty good job of trying to make it a little bit easier for military members when they're able to get leave to come on and enjoy the parks.
Yeah, that's really cool that they, especially with the ticket deal, that they don't require you to use it within that time, because I think dealing with things like, you know, when you have to be on duty and everything, it would make more sense to be able to spread that out between a few different things. I mean, most people can just, you know, they have a vacation, they can spend a week with their family or whatever, but in the military, sometimes it's not as easy as that.
And sometimes you don't know when you're going to get time off until just a few days before get the time off, right?
Yeah.
So it's difficult to schedule a long holiday and to be confident that all the money that you pour into that in terms of reservations is actually going to be useful to you, because you'll actually be able to go. You know what I mean? So this sort of a ticket has, I think, extra value for folks that aren't able to schedule as strictly.
Wow, yeah, that's a great
really
deal.
Neat. So, Tim, are there any other discounts that Disney offers, whether it be restaurants, merchandise, that sort of thing, that you're able to get in the resort, or is it just for just this really great deal for tickets?
Not that I've ever been able to discover. You know, at some point, you kind of feel bad asking for more and more discounts.
Right? Sure.
So, yeah, the ticket prices are actually good enough that you feel like you know, Disney has kind of gone out of their way enough. I mean, the value of your Disney experiences mileage may vary depending on each person, right? But I think for getting in for a full day, any day of the year, almost for the equivalent of $50, I think is pretty fantastic, especially as a park hopper.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's a great deal.
And especially if you're going with your family, you know, because like you said, you've got a couple of kids and your wife and you. So, I mean, that could really add up if you had to pay regular full price for things. And then with the limitation of that, you have to use it within the 14 days and everything. So not only I think the perk here, which is something I don't think most people would even think of, is not only is it cheaper, but you also have a lot more flexibility with it, which is...
Yeah, the flexibility is huge.
Yeah. We kind of talked off air at the beginning about the flag retreat. So the flag retreat was something that Teresa and I experienced. We were actually there with another one of our listeners, Ace, who was in the military as well. And we kind of watched it. I remember years and years ago, this, to me, I remember it as a very kind of simple... flag retreat ceremony. They kind of came out with the band, they took down the flags, they kind of did a couple little things, and then it was kind of done. But I feel like now it's actually kind of like a whole production that they
it
do
was, yeah.
You know, they come out with the band, they come down Main Street with the band, and then they call people from the different branches of the military to come out as they play the different military songs, and everybody kind of has a moment to salute those members of the military.
And the Dapper Dans were present.
And the Dapper Dans were there, and they were singing the national anthem and some other patriotic songs. And then, of course, they have the whole thing with, you know, bringing down the flag and folding it in the respectful way it needs to be folded, and then taking it out of town square. So I thought it was very touching that there were so many people that were there that showed their respect for all of these people who have protected and served our country over the years. So there was people of all ages. There was also family members of people who were in the military that were able to go and stand and be saluted by everybody as well. Now, Tim, you were saying that you've walked by this, but have not sat through the entire production.
I don't think I've definitely never participated. I think we may have walked in right around retreat, and of course, at that point, you know, you pay the appropriate honors and respects and watch it. But I don't think I know we've never made a point of going to see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would highly recommend next time you're there to go see it, because I thought it was really good. And I thought it was really well done. Like I said, they had like Teresa said, they had the Dapper Dans there and stuff. That was more of a production, like I said, than I thought previously had kind of been.
Yeah, and it's always great to see the bands perform, you know, whenever they're deliberately made to be the stars of the show, you know what I mean? It's really cool to see them kind of let loose.
Well, and it was cool to see the Disneyland band in conjunction with the Dapper Dans, because it was like two worlds colliding, because, you know, the Dapper Dans, they make their own music.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Yeah, it's very cool. And Tank, I don't know if you mentioned this, but I thought it was really moving. They kind of had a crowd gathered, and we were around the base garden that the flagpole is in. So it's kind of a circular garden there. And then when they had the military members, they didn't just kind of momentarily, pay respect to those individuals that were present. They actually had them step forward. And so they actually made a single ring around the base of the flag around the garden there. So it was very touching, because they were, you know, kind of they were center of attention for the whole ceremony.
Did you see the gentleman that like was in a wheelchair, and he got out of the wheelchair and went and stood up? Like, that moments like that are very touching, because, like, obviously, you know, he served our country and everything. And the fact that, like, he still feels that pride and respect so much so that, like, he could get himself out of his wheelchair to stand. I mean, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I do like to see any kind of an event that shows the face of, you know, military members, especially if they're just kind of milling around in the audience, in the group of guests, instead of, well, these are specifically people who happen to be in uniform. Well, these are other, just other guests that are enjoying the park with you. And it's nice to sort of, to see the whole population, just kind of recognize that, I guess.
And kind of to touch on the point you made earlier in the discussion that kind of reminded me of something too, that you said the military salute kind of started after 9/11. I feel that as a country, it seems like we've, in America, we've gotten really good at appreciating our troops and stuff since 9/11, because I know that my understanding, at least of it, was that before that, especially after things like Vietnam and stuff, that people were very, we're not necessarily as patriotic when it comes to the military forces. So I'm glad to see that, like, we've come around as a society and really respect and appreciate everything that you guys have done to give us all of our liberties and freedoms and stuff that we have, because most of us, I would say, and you probably agree with this, that most people probably don't even think about it every day, that all the stuff and sacrifices that people have to do to allow us to have the lifestyle we're used to, and to have a Disneyland and a Disney World, and to be free and be able to, you know, have our freedoms of speech and everything like that. So,
Tim, so when we were kind of talking before when we were planning on what we were going to talk about for this episode, you also mentioned that you were very interested in the different design and social engineering aspects that they use in the park.
Yeah, I definitely think one of the things that Disney does, especially in Disneyland, because the park was never made or intended to have the volume and the number of guests that it has, is they spend a lot of time thinking about how they're going to move people from one area of the park to another, and how they're going to try and not make it feel like there's just an absolute crush of people in there, like an unmanageable amount of people. And I know that they've done a lot over the last couple of years, which I didn't get to see very much of, unfortunately, with the, I guess they call it Project Stardust, and
yep.
trying to open up some of the pinch points and the necks, you know, where the pathways get more narrow. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see that. But, what I've definitely seen Disney do, mainly with cast members, but sometimes also with signage, is just kind of control the way people move around the park. And I thought it was so powerful how much influence a cast member who's holding a lit baton and waving it in a certain direction can have. You know, like, for example, when they're getting ready to do the fireworks, they'll post cast members kind of surrounding Fantasyland, and they'll wave those batons, and that will cause 9 out of 10 people to walk up to them and just veer in the same direction that mm-hmm. baton is waving. And if you walk up, and I have walk up to them and say, "Hey, can I go back here and take a look at this thing that happens to be behind you?" They'll say, "Oh yeah, go ahead. That's fine." Not stopping waving their baton, you know, but they know that they can influence the way that people move. And I know once we were on Main Street and I saw one of the guests take a spill off of the curb. Mm. And I think they turned their ankle and they were probably sitting on the ground, kind of, rocking back and forth. And at the wrong time of day, that can immediately cause, a group of, 50 or 60 people standing around, even if the guest isn't really hurt, it just causes people to stop and look. And so before you know it, there was a cast member and they had a radio and they touched their ear and said something, and then there's 5 or 6 cast members all standing around that guest, all waving a little baton or just swinging their arm, And it's impressive that Disney recognizes how important it is to just influence people moving around the park, and how that, basically nonstop from park opening to park close, especially in the vicinity of park close with the shows and the fireworks mm-hmm. and the nighttime parades, they really pull out all the stops and kind of influence the flow of people moving around. I've always just found that interesting to watch. And I'm sure they have people who just, sit up in the top of the rooftops and study and videotape the flow of bodies moving mm-hmm. back and forth and try and come up with different solutions.
I've always been impressed with this too, because I feel, and actually this was something that Teresa and I were disappointed with D23, was that we were so used to Disney doing such an expert job. I think beyond theming and attractions and stuff, I think that crowd control is something that they are masters of.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And so when we went to D23, it was not that. It was kind of chaos. Nobody really knew where you were supposed to go. Some people would tell us to go. We had the one panel.
They did not have lighted batons.
No, they didn't. But they. Right. But there was the time where we got told, oh, you'll actually get a better seat if because you're a D23 member, even though you have reservations, just stand up here. And then by the time we got within arm's reach of where we needed to go, oh, that side was full. You need to go to where your reservations were. So it was just chaotic. But I'll tell you, once we got over into Disneyland and had to move around, it was very nice to have those people with the batons or even their arms or just their voices of mm-hmm. keep it moving. You got to move to the left. If you're going out of the park, you got to go this way. If you're going over to Tomorrowland, go this way. And it's very good. And they keep people moving. And I think that's also important because there's so many times, especially at Disneyland, where people get distracted and they stop in the middle of the pathway or whatever. And I'll tell you, man, those cast members are on it. And one last thing I want to say about the cast members that do crowd control, because I think it's really important, is I think that they have a really thankless job. I don't think people, the average guest, thinks about what they're doing. And I think the average guest sometimes will even get upset at them and say nasty things to them or not understand how it's all working. And I think that they do an amazing job at holding their temper when people are being difficult and dealing with thousands of people who don't want to go where you want them to go.
That's right.
You know, and not understanding. I mean, I was frustrated one of the times we were in the park last week because I wanted to go to Adventureland, but I couldn't just go to Adventureland. I had to go into Frontierland and loop back around.
Yeah.
After the fireworks.
First we had the Main Street Electrical Parade going on, plus the fireworks. So there was a lot going on Main Street in the hub at night. So we got to see, we were really excited because we actually got to see both sides, those like service corridors that are behind Main Street. We got to go down and up both sides of that. So that was pretty cool being the...
I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Being the Disney nerds we are, we get really excited about things like that.
Everybody else in our party thought we were weird. But yeah.
So we had been in DCA. I think we would watch World of Color. And then we decided we want to go over to do something in... I don't remember if it was Adventureland or what, but we wanted to be on the left side of the park. So the only service corridor that was open was the right side of Main Street. So we were going behind like the Tomorrowland side. Yeah. So we get out and I think the Main Street Electrical Parade was going. So of course you can't just cross over. They actually rerouted us up
around the Astro Orbiter.
Around the Astro Orbiters back
to the front of the Astro Orbiter.
Yeah, back towards the hub. Let us cross the street right in front of Elliot. I was very excited.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Through the middle of the hub, out the other side.
Yep. We went through Frontierland, and then we could then kind of backtrack a little and get into Adventureland. So it was not the most direct route by any means.
But it flowed.
But it worked. It worked really well.
But you got there,
Yep, and we got there. It took, obviously, a little bit longer. But then I felt so bad for the cast members because, of course, they're removing those lovely... as they so call them, French fry rocks in front of Tomorrowland.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They had this huge construction wall up that they were having to direct traffic around.
Oh, yeah, that made it even worse.
Extra fun, yeah.
Yeah, can you imagine those cast members multiple times every single day are putting that tape down, you know, for this parade or that show, and then pulling the tape up and then put it down again, and then they rolled around those carts that have the steel poles that, you know, have the chains connected. And so they roll that out to one area and set up the chain poles. And then that's probably only the case for like an hour.
Right.
Yeah. And then they take them all down and put them back on the cart and roll them somewhere else.
It's really amazing. Because then if you pay attention to, you're looking at these cast member uniforms, they're coming from all over the place. So
we actually talked to one of the trainers who was by the Astro Orbiter. Because when we were stopped because the parade was going, we asked him how things were. And he said he's a trainer. And that they basically, when the parade or when the fireworks or when Fantasmic is going, the attractions are not as busy. So they pull staff from the attractions that are not as busy to do guest control. Yeah. And then,
of course, when it's all over,
they go back to their attractions. But I'll tell you what, they have that. I know we're talking about military stuff, but like they are military precise with things because like the fireworks, they had all the ropes up and everything where you could be. But if you watched, literally like a minute before the fireworks are open, they are gunning it through to remove all those ropes and remove all those poles. So by the time the fireworks are over, but not a second before, but like right there, that it is done. So when the fireworks are over and you need to move, suddenly all those barriers are gone and you didn't even notice they did it.
Really amazing. Isn't that amazing?
They, like I said, they are really good at this. And a couple trips ago, actually, there was a cast member who was doing control, and somebody was being nasty to them or whatever. And Laura and I were there, and we kind of popped off to the guest for the cast member because we knew she couldn't say anything. And she thanked us. And I said, "You guys have been doing this for 60 plus years. We just trust that you guys know what you're doing, because, you know, we don't know. We're only here, you know, a handful of times, you know, in our life or whatever. And we, you know, you guys know how things need to flow. So just listen. If everybody just listens to the cast members, things would be very great."
And it's really interesting, you know, certainly with Orlando, but even you can just walk right across the Esplanade and see how differently DCA was designed.
Oh, yeah.
And see how all the little overflow areas were built in, you know, all the little spill throughs and their equivalent of the hub, instead of sort of being a pinch point, is like everything is just super wide open. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very easy to get from one area to the other, where, you know, in Disneyland, there are certain areas, and I know they're working on it, there are certain areas that are just always bad. And I think that was just sort of designed out of California Adventure.
Yeah. I mean, that was one thing that I noticed when we were walking through California Adventure, was like when we were going from the front entrance area by the Carthay Circle restaurant, just past what is going to be Marvel Land and over by Cars Land, that walkway is just huge. Yeah. Like you could drive probably three or four cars next to each other on it and still have room. So definitely there's nowhere in Disneyland that's like that. Well, even the parade route is actually fairly narrow.
Mm-hmm. Think of this too. Yeah, the World of Color viewing area versus Fantasmic's viewing area.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's no comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's night and day difference. It's crazy.
That was the other point I was going to make earlier. So we were talking about how they can move stuff. We actually talked to another person who was talking about how not only will they use the people with the wands, but they'll also use wait times. Like they will artificially inflate or deflate wait times to get people to move to a certain part of the park that they want them
in. I suspect that's true as well, Tage. I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, we talked to somebody.
I think it was Fred from Touring Plans that told us about that.
Because they crunch all the data and they got people in the park every single day that go through these lines, and they do their own timing and everything. So it comes out to they compare their timing with Disney's timing on things, because we experienced it a ton of times when we were in the park where it said like a 10-minute wait and it was just walk on. Or it was like a 15-minute wait and it was walk on. Like, didn't we have like a 40-minute wait for Space Mountain and we got on it in like 10 minutes?
Yeah, we had a 25-minute wait for Indiana Jones that we just walked right on. So we were joking that it actually just takes you 25 minutes
to walk through the queue.
From the beginning of the queue actually to the attraction.
Yeah, well, it's true.
I think like the perfect world for Disney is every queue completely full and the walkway is relatively empty so that you can have the maximum number of guests, right? And nobody feels like they're getting crushed by other guests. So in their perfect world, they just kind of do this smooth peanut butter spread of all the guests to all the attractions.
Which, again, is just amazing, because when you think about it, whenever I visit... So I'm not really a big fan of crowds, but I love Disneyland, because even though I know that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the same space with me, I never actually feel like I'm with thousands of other people. You still feel like there's a lot of space. It still feels very small and quaint. And you don't, I mean, obviously if you're doing something like the fireworks or Fantasmic or something where everybody kind of congregates together, you get a better sense of how many people are in the parks. But it's really, truly amazing how open it can feel, even though there's a ton of other people there, and how you can almost feel like it's, you know, it's my own personal park today, but it isn't.
Well, it's interesting to think about how comfortable you feel getting wedged in right next to someone else in a queue. Whereas if you were standing out on the hub and somebody was 6 inches to your right and 6 inches to your left, you'd be like, well, you need to get away from it right now.
That's true. Yeah. You're in my
But in the queue, you're just going to stand right there. Yeah. You want to get a little bit further forward.
Yeah.
Interesting. I never thought of that too. Mm-mm. Good point.
Although, one thing that seems counter to what you're saying, Tim, from the Disney aspect of it, is FastPass and MaxPass seems to kind of counterintuitively do that, because if they wanted people in the queues all the time, they wouldn't have a FastPass and MaxPass, because FastPass came about in the late 90s when Paul Pressler ran the resort, and he was all retail guy. So he wanted people not in lines. He wanted people in stores. Oh. So they were trying to get people out of the lines. So what are you going to do while you're waiting for your fast pass for Indy? You'd go shop. And so there was a lot more shops and stores open.
The history was.
Mm-hmm. That's so that's kind of what started it, is they didn't want people in queues. They wanted people out on the paths and seeing stores and buying food and doing all that and buying your turkey leg and your churro and all that stuff. Where, you know, but it was masked kind of as a convenience, because of course you don't want to wait in line. You want to go do other things. Well, those other things are usually shopping or whatever. So that was kind of where that came from. So then when we were using MaxPass, I enjoyed it because, yes, you didn't have to walk over and do it, which I know I was very anti-MaxPass when we talked about it in our chat and on the show before. I don't think the week we went was a good indicator, though, no. Because the whole week was fairly calm. Mm-hmm. And actually, if we didn't have FastPass or MaxPass, we still could have seen everything we saw. It just would have taken a little bit longer. But it wasn't that bad. Most of the stuff, like Pirates, every time we walked by Pirates, it was like a 5 or 10 minute.
Yeah, a 5 and 10 minute wait the whole week we were there.
What I do miss.
I've always thought that FastPass and MaxPass, like the intent was, or maybe this is just the way it is for me. The intent was to like make the guests feel like they were actually enjoying the park and the attractions, and they didn't do it wrong, and you know, they didn't mistakenly get in the wrong queue and forget about this thing and the other, but they were actually able to do some attractions and enjoy themselves and get some value for their day, instead of, you know, making all the wrong choices and wasting all their time and money. I know that in Orlando, you know, it's a little bit different. My information is about 8 years old now, but
sure,
you had basically the access to the fast pass on the app, and that came for free with the price of your ticket. Mm-hmm. And you were allowed to book, I think, 3 passes into the future. But if you use the app, I know that if you just said, I want to, you know, do this e-ticket and maybe this other one, the first answer they would give you, the first possible response would be kind of spread out throughout the day. So one would be in the morning, one would be like midday, and one would be early afternoon. But if you kept looking, you could actually get fast passes that were earlier in the day.
Yeah.
So what Disney was trying to do was give everybody the sense that they got the park experience, right? But at the same time, not give all those park experiences to the first people who logged in. And they wanted to keep some that were available. So I'm wondering if that's going to happen with Disney's Genie app, if that ends up coming to Disneyland. It's going to be smart, but not really in entirely your best interests, or trying to give all the guests at the park a good day. You know what I mean? A good time.
Mm-hmm.
That
was part of my problem with MaxPass and the Magic Bands and stuff in Disney World. Was I kind of missed the days when I was a kid and would go, or a young adult and I would go, before FastPass was a thing. And basically you would just go and like enjoy your day. Like you didn't have to plan a lot of stuff. Like I feel like nowadays, like with the dining packages, especially in Disney World, a lot of their restaurants require reservations for different things. And so like you have to literally, so you have to use people like concierge, and you have to like have them wake up at like 7 a.m. and as soon as things open, you know, book things. Like it's this whole race. And to me, that's not fun. That's not what I want from Disney. I just want to go to Disney and I want to go on the attractions I want to go on. I want to eat where I want to eat. I don't want to have to like plan so far.
Is that
far
all
in
you
advance.
Want, Sage? That's it?
Well, the thing is, I just don't want to have to like think about it months and months in advance, because what happens if months and months in advance I want to do something, but then like by the time the day comes, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, we went and we booked for this trip for the podcast, we booked 2 dining packages and a lunch. And, you know, it came down to it, and we kind of had decided when we were there, like, okay, we booked them, but like maybe now that we're here in the moment, maybe we shouldn't have booked this. We had that with Carthay Circle, where some people in our group were like, well, maybe we shouldn't have done this dining package. But But we had to plan it so far in advance and everything. Like at the time, it seemed like the right thing to do. I don't know. I liked it back in the day where it was more like you could just more organically move around the park and do things. I do like the convenience of it. I will concede that like it did make our lives a lot easier, especially like mobile ordering and stuff that we could skip a line and get our stuff. And I do like the convenience, but at the same time, like you're saying, Tim, with Disney World, where, you know, if there's those people, those early risers, you know, the early bird gets the worm, and then like the later people, there's no more worms left. And so like it's a worse experience for some people and a better experience for others. And where before, when there wasn't Max or Fastpass, I thought that it was more an even playing field for everybody, because if there was a line, there was a line. If there wasn't a line, there wasn't a line. And it just is what it was. If you were there when it was short, you had a short wait. If you're there when it's long, you can come back later and not have to like try to game it.
Definitely in your perfect world, Tage, you know, I think we would agree that a family that has never been to the parks before could also go and, not knowing anything, have a great day on any possible day, right? But unfortunately, sometimes it's just way too crowded for that. Mm-hmm. And it's the some kind of pass plan is a good way to have a good day without just spending the entire day in one or two queues. So I don't know. The other option is tickets going way up and reducing the number of guests in the park, right? Because Disney's making revenue off of the ticket price instead of the number of tickets sold. I don't think we want that.
And I disagree with that one. I definitely want Disneyland and Disney World to be affordable for all families, because I think that was the original intent from Walt, was that parents and family could have fun together. But I also think that they realize that they have something that's very valuable. So, of course, as a company that's publicly traded, they have to monetize and try to make money off of it, which I don't, you know, it's the reason we have such a great product, right? Because they were able to make money and invest in things. So
I do think that we're pretty fortunate, though, because I think if you go to Disney World, I feel like I need to like Uber plan for a Disney World trip. I don't feel that way necessarily, though, with Disneyland. I feel like I need to plan maybe my dining packages. But truth be told, when Vern and I were there for Pixar Fest, we actually walked up and spoke to the person, the host or hostess that was at the Blue Bayou, and we actually got seated right away for our dining package, which is not the norm, but you know, it can still happen. But
you can still walk into it sometimes,
But I mean, the only thing I feel like we have to book for Disneyland is dining package type things. But like, we got to go to a lot of really great restaurants without having to make sure we had a reservation ahead of time.
That's true.
To be able to sit, you know, there. Whereas Disney World, unfortunately, to get in those really awesome restaurants, you do have to have that reservation. So I think we have a nice little bubble still at Disneyland where we still can walk up and do what we want to do. But if you're an Uber planner, you can also go that route as well.
The only thing that I don't like Max and Fastpass about, and I think really does make a bad experience, is the standby line moves a lot slower because they're letting in so many faster Max Pass people in. So like, for instance,
that's very frustrating as a standby waiter, especially if you didn't think about or you didn't know about the Fast Pass.
Well, you know, we went to Galaxy's Edge and the Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run does not have Fast Pass yet. And every time we waited, it was very quick. Even though the line was very long a couple times, it moved.
Yeah.
So I don't mind being in a line if I feel like I'm getting somewhere. But I feel like there were times when we had Max Pass this trip that we were walking past these people in the standby line and they looked like they hadn't moved in forever, it felt like.
Yeah.
Because they might let Disney World, we were standing, we had Max or Fast Pass for Soarin' over California there. And we asked the cast member, how many people do you let in for each line? And they were saying that they let in like, what was it? It was some crazy amount. It was like for every 10 people they let in for Mac or for Fast Pass, they were letting in like two standby. So like most of the people that are going to experience an attraction in the days are going to be Fast Pass people. And then much less for standby. So the standby lines would actually be a lot shorter if there wasn't Fastpass.
Yeah, and if something's going wrong in the attraction, you're going to, as a cast member, you're going to get way more grief from a guest who has a Fastpass reservation is showing it to you than from somebody who's just in the standby line waiting for, you know, the next guest in front of them to move.
Yeah,
definitely. So I think they know that, you know, if something goes wrong, they have to make the standby line riders eat that weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately. So, I don't know. A lot of people like it. Like I said, I enjoyed it. I feel, yeah, I feel like people that utilize it love it because you do kind of get like a leg up on things. And I think that there are people who, when you don't have it, like it's out for the day or something, I think it you can kind of get disgruntled with it, I guess.
I know my family loves it. They definitely feel like if we get a number of fast passes and just kind of go bam, 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 that they feel like we're just killing the park, you know, we're getting all the good attractions. And I did not used to mind running from one side of the park to the other, but my family really didn't like it. You know, they found that very stressful. Yeah. I'm sure. Peeling off after one attraction and running on to the next one, or we get in the queue.
Well, it's supposed to be a vacation, right? Not a marathon.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't mind it, but it's taken me a while in this marriage to figure out that what does not stress out my family is actually the best thing for me as well. But I think I'm finally getting there. So that's important.
It takes time.
That's perfect because you now have that peace of mind right before, because you're now very close to Disneyland Paris. So you can kind of maybe go in that a little more relaxed with your family.
That's right. Yeah, we haven't talked about that very much. I haven't done a whole lot of research, a couple of videos, but I'm kind of excited about getting a chance to see Disneyland Paris. We'll see how it compares.
I'm excited for you. It just I haven't been there, but from the photos, it just looks beautiful.
Tim, I will tell you that I think you're very lucky because when I went there in 2012, it was still under the control of whatever the organization that they had determined to work with or whatever. Disney now owns it again, so
they
put in a lot of Disney stuff. When I went, I thought, and I still think, it's the most beautiful Disney park they've ever designed. Tony Baxter led up the design and building of it, so, you know, I love Tony Baxter. That is my favorite castle. That is the only castle, and I know people are probably going to write nasty emails to us after I say this, but that is the only castle. If they decided to do something different with Sleeping Beauty Castle, I would totally not even care if they said they were putting in the castle from Paris. I'd be like, perfect. I love it.
It's gorgeous.
It's beautiful, but I don't think it would fit very well.
It probably wouldn't fit. I'll tell you that the Phantom Manor that's there is amazing. They actually just upgraded a bunch of the technology in there, so that's going to be a really cool experience. The waiting room that you get in before you go in the stretching room, they have a cool effect that they just added where when you go in, it looks old and decrepit, and as it starts to tell the narration, like lightning happens and it turns into like totally clean, rejuvenated walls and stuff.
Really?
So I think that they did a really good job with that. And the video makes it look good. I have to imagine in person it's even better. So that I think is really awesome. I love the train there because things are a little bit more open. If you have a chance to go in the wintertime when it's like snowing, it's beautiful there because Disney park with snow would be so cool. So they're doing a lot of stuff there, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. And it's, like I said, it's a very beautiful park. There's a lot of things at this park that are very reminiscent of older Disneyland, like the area over by Pirates of the Caribbean is very much like Skull Rock and stuff that used to be in Fantasyland at Disneyland up until the 1983 renovations. So that's kind of a play area that's pretty cool. Of course, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, you go under the river there and you come out on the island, and the island is where the attraction is.
That's pretty cool.
Space Mountain, of course, you get launched right off the bat, and there's a section that opens up and you can actually see the car going by before it goes in. So there's a lot of really cool touches. It's very much like when I went to Disney World for the first time, and I said, this is weird because it's Disneyland, but everything's just different enough that it's a totally different thing. And it's almost impossible to compare because, yes, it's Space Mountain, yes, it's the Haunted Mansion, yes, it's Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, but it's different enough that it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I can't even compare. Like, I just love it all.
Even though they have the same names, they're separate attractions. Mm-hmm. For sure.
So you're going to love it, Tim. We'll have to have you on.
You guys will enjoy it, yeah.
We'll have to have you on after you go there. Maybe once we start Mouse Kingdoms back up, we'll have to have you on and talk about that. So
I'd love to.
One last question. So, and I think we may have figured out what your perfect job at Disneyland or DCA would be, since we were talking about an experience we had. But if you were to work for the parks, what would you want to do and why? And again, sky is the limit. So even if you want to make up your own job that maybe it doesn't actually exist, that's not on the table.
Well, I'm going to say this. This didn't happen in Anaheim, although I can imagine it happening in Anaheim. When My kids were very young. We were riding the monorail in Orlando, and one of my kids had a little wand, and it's like just a fairy wand. I forget where we got it, but it was not specifically at a Disney store.
Okay.
And as we were getting off the monorail, she dropped it and it fell down and it was irretrievably lost.
Oh, no.
Right. And so there were tears, and we went back to kind of look for it. And the monorail attendant, you know, leaned over the edge of the loading platform and could see it was gone. And he got out, and I imagine a lot of cast members have this, but he got out this little pad, and it's, you know, said, you know, there were some blanks, and it said, like, give this guest blank. And so he wrote, you know, filled in, give this guest, you know, a wand with a star on top to be redeemed at any merchandise store. And he signed it at the bottom. Wow. He probably put an employee number and gave it to us. And we took it, you know, to whatever shop that had the closest thing. And we showed it to the cast member at the cash register. And she said, okay, this is fine. And she, you know, gave us the merchandise. But it was so cool that, you know, that monorail attendant had the authority to do that,
yeah.
that Disney Corporation had given him the authority to do that. And he was in a great position to just make somebody's day, you know what I mean? In a very physical way, even more so than, you know, a smile and a wave, which is nice,
right?
But also to like change the direction of somebody's day. So well, I'll say a monorail attendant. That would be
there. You go.
I think was it Connie that we had on that worked in the store? Who was it that we had? On? We had a guest on that worked in the stores, and they were kind of explaining about how that they are empowered throughout the day for various little things
though.
To be able to, you know, give kids things or, you know, whatever, if something, you know,
extra magic,
mm-hmm. And you know what? And that's. There's two companies I really like. I like the Disney company, and I also like Apple. And the reason I like both of them is because every experience I've ever had with them that has been negative, they've gone above and beyond to turn it into a positive. And I think that is what makes the Disney magic, is the fact that even if you have a bad experience, they want to make it a good experience. I will say we did get a piece of feedback email this week talking about somebody who's canceling or who is not renewing their annual pass because they've had numerous bad experiences in a row. And I think that it's just unfortunate that they happen to be the person that had a bunch of bad experiences in a row. But I think that Disney tries, with the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that show up to their gates every day and all of their parks and their stores and everything, I think that they really do want to do a good job, and they really do want to do right by the customer or the guest. And I think that just sometimes at that scale, it becomes difficult to catch everything. And so, but I think that when they do catch it, they are empowered to do the right thing. And I think that Disney generally does a great job at that.
Oh, in my experience. Yeah, for sure. It's been good.
Mm-hmm. So, well, Tim, thanks so much for sharing some of your experiences and information about the military and your thoughts about crowd control and how they manipulate people around the park to get them where they need to be in the design. And of course, spending a late evening for you over there with us. And hopefully people that listen to this will learn some new stuff and maybe pay some attention to these things, or maybe some military members that didn't know they could do some of these discounts will find out about that as well. And yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being flexible with the timing. It was really great to spend 90 minutes chatting with you guys and laughing and sharing some stories. So really appreciate it. And I look forward to hearing more from you in the future.
Well, if you're going to the park soon and want to be wearing some fun DL Weekly swag,
like Teresa is right now, actually,
head on over to dlweekly.net/store to pick some up.
Well, did you enjoy listening to this episode of DL Weekly? Well, you could support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat that we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. Please consider joining supporters like Eric J and head on over to dlweekly.net/support, and maybe you will be the 100th supporter of the podcast.
Woo-hoo!
And that will be amazing.
Well, now it's time to return to James in Trivia Land to go and get the answers to this week's trivia.
It was a pretty good week, I thought.
We'll
see how you're feeling
out
in a little bit. All right. Haunted Mansion
I'm confident
Holiday.
On one.
One? Haunted Mansion Holiday?
Yes. Yeah, you start strong, right?
Typical. That Teresa would know Haunted Mansion Holiday.
All right. In front of Haunted Mansion Holiday, what is Jack Skellington holding in his hand? And it is a snowflake, just like Teresa Yay! Said. No surprise, Teresa knows the Haunted Mansion trivia. Sorry, Tig.
That's okay.
Second question came from Barbara B. What are the names of the two roads that intersect Main Street? You were indeed correct that Center Street is one of them. But you should have thought about the place that you eat nearby. It's Ernie. Plaza Street.
Oh, Plaza.
For the Plaza Inn.
I got to look this up real quick. I want
to
see.
Not anything to do floral. Like Carnation would have been good, though, since the Carnation Cafe is right there.
Carnation would have been a good guess as well. You were at least on a good track with your mindset, intentional or not. All right, so our third question comes from Richard S. Up to date, how many sitting presidents have visited Disneyland Park in Anaheim? And I hear now that Teresa's had time to think, she wants to update her answer.
I'm going
to
say three now.
Three sitting presidents have visited. And Tag, you're sticking with one?
I'm sticking with one.
Yeah, Teresa, you shouldn't have changed your answer. It was zero.
Dang it!
Oh!
You were correct that Nixon was vice president when he came to visit. No one has come when they are currently serving as president, though many have been former presidents or were senators or presidential candidates.
Or like Ronald Reagan, who opened the park.
That's true, back in a former career.
Yeah, darn. Sure. You know what, though? Imagine like the security nightmare.
Oh, that's very true.
Yeah.
Yep. Hard
so
enough.
They just got a Michael Jackson. They just got to put on a hat and just walk around like and pretend that they're not who they are.
And our last question comes from Carrie M. There are flags all along Main Street, USA, and at the train station. How many flags are there?
Both
of you said five, and it's a week of trick questions. There's only one true American flag. All the rest are fakes. They leave out stars or stripes on them, so that way...
What?
Yeah. There are fake flags.
That,
but why?
That makes a lot of sense, because I was thinking one because of the flag retreat ceremony, because that's the only one that you see them... You know, retire
yeah,
at the end of the day.
Because you can leave it up at night as long as it's lit. And they light them.
No, I know.
Correct.
But
there's also other issues that they would have to come into with American flag regulations, such as flying them at half staff when they're told
oh.
to.
Yeah.
Or other things that come up. So they only do the one true American flag with the flag raising ceremony.
Oh.
All the rest are slightly altered. A nice little loophole.
That's really interesting.
Well, what another great week of trivia. I love asking your questions. Feel free to send them in and help us learn cool stuff, just like Barbara B., Richard S., and Carrie M. did for this week's episode. You can send me an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.